Welcome back, everybody, into Bills Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, it's been a while.
It's been so long that I was actually even wondering if you'd get the intro. Like, it's been nothing. Like, you were doing it yesterday. You did a great job there.
Thank you. Felt good.
We've been a bit busy for all the right reasons, you know, and stuff like that. So, a little out of the shake of things here, but it's March 16th as we're recording this. Shout out to my wife. It's her birthday today.
Happy birthday, Sammy.
But overall, it's good to be back in the chair. It's good to be back behind the mic in front of the camera. And I guess this would technically be the start of season 4 of Bills Chat, Josh.
Yeah, time flies. It does not feel like we've been doing this for 4 seasons. But look, we put out a tweet several weeks ago from our account. And look, you all were so supportive and understanding. We know we hadn't been tweeting as much. We hadn't been putting out episodes since the season ended. There were 2 major life updates happening for us, and both very similar. We're both recording from new houses, not the same new house. Luca and his wife bought a house, and then I bought a house, and the moving happened right around the same time. And if anybody that's moved and dealt with buying or potentially selling a house knows, it's not just a one day thing. So we've been preoccupied with that. Exciting times, Luca. But you know, you put out a tweet like that, people start wondering, did somebody get sick? Did nothing like that that we know of. Knock on wood. We're both happy and healthy, but we're displaying some new digs tonight and some old digs here too with Josh Allen behind us. But Luca, we're good to go. Your office is looking great, and you know, a little bit bigger than the last office you had. But yeah, as far as people being concerned about us, nothing to be concerned about. We're just excited about where things are going in our personal lives. And then tonight we're going to talk about where things are going for the Bills. Any thoughts on the personal stuff first?
No, I mean, it's been fun on the personal side, but as you said, extremely busy. Appreciate anyone that understands. It is a bummer that we both somehow timed it up at the exact same time. So then all of a sudden it's combine. I remember one person replied to the tweet you had sent out. Come on, guys, it's combine time. It's like, hey, trust me, I tried to pay attention as much as I could. Stuff like that. But when you're actively moving between one house to the other, figuring things out, there's a lot that goes into it. And unfortunately, even something as much as we love, like this podcast and the Twitter account that we run or X account, you just got to kind of put it aside, or you just can't dedicate the time we like to normally. Obviously, we will be back in the swing of things starting now. Overall, we'll be getting back into it. The draft is coming up, stuff like that. But it's good to be back and kind of settled a little bit now. We were even going to try to record last week for anyone, but realistically, we still were trying to get our feet wet with where we were at personally. But I'm happy to hear you're doing good. I know I'm doing good, and I'm ready to talk some Bills football because a lot has happened since we've last been behind the mic.
A lot has happened, and because how busy we've been, you and I have not really had a chance to talk to each other about what's happened, which is unique for us because we generally talk daily, at least every other day, in a chat group on Discord, keeping up with each other. And the Bills have made a series of moves. They've lost a couple players. They've traded away a player, a notable player, and they've cut some guys. So we're going to just kind of recap everything that's happened this offseason and just talk about how it's going, what we think about how it's going, what do they still need, and what do we expect the Bills to do from this point on, and obviously, and what does that mean for the draft? But Luca, first question for you tonight as we get into what the Bills have done this offseason. And I'll recap the question that I put on Twitter that we got quite a bit of responses for. So far, Luca, complete this sentence. The Bills offseason has been blank. What's your blank?
Productive but underwhelming. And I kind of put that "but" in there because productive in the sense of they're making moves, they're doing things, they're trying to kind of structure this roster after dealing with a offseason and or kind of a season of where they needed to eat a lot of cap, eat a lot of money, sit on their hands a bit, kind of be creative with their finances last year. Now they had a little bit of flexibility and then created even more flexibility by, you know, extending individuals that they could do some things in the free agent market, kind of evaluate the trade market, do some stuff that could impact this roster. And they've made a handful, if not more, of moves, but it's a little bit underwhelming because even when you, the highlight of it is Joey Bosa being brought in to play that edge opposite of Rousseau, who they did extend at a contract number that I am very much a fan of for what it's worth. The Bosa move is one that I don't hate it, but I'm not in love with it either. It's Bosa is going to be one that needs to prove something to someone like myself. Just because now he's not alone where a lot of Chargers seem to have injury issues to a point where you have to question if their medical staff is even good. But overall he has had this track record of injuries and even kind of been hit or miss in the intermittent there where maybe he's even playing through injuries and, or just something's not working with him anymore, that I don't know if you're getting that kind of elite edge that you think of with the name Bosa. Of course, his younger brother still does it at a very high level in San Fran. But Joey's one that I'm not overly sold at. And I think after you get past Joey Bosa, I see it's weird just saying Joey, getting past Bosa, it definitely starts to check the boxes of a little bit underwhelming. And for instance, Michael Hoyt is an individual that, as someone that watches a lot of Cardinals and NFC West games, he pops on tape and he's a very good player in his own right. But one, it's not like he's going to just all of a sudden turn this defense over and be a staple of the edge. He's just going to be part of the rotation. He's just going to be a depth piece. A good depth piece in that. And then on top of it, the cherry that is on top is, you know, he comes with a 6-game suspension, which is just oh so wonderful. Props to him for what it's worth when that came out. And he said he heard the news. He unfortunately realized that he couldn't trust an individual he thought he could, and he just owned up to it. I respect that as an individual, as a person. So there's that. But I will also say, when you're really looking at it, and Rasul Douglas isn't on this team as of right now, you traded away Kyrie Elam as it is, as you also mentioned, and we can get into a little bit more. And for instance, if I just pull up PFF to just have a basic thing in front of me, you have Christian Benford on one side, and Codrington is technically in their eyes lineup on the other side. That sure won't be what I imagine happens come week one, but there's things like that that are still present that make you feel like, yes, they've made some moves, but I'm underwhelmed by the impact I really feel like they will have sitting here in mid-March when there's still a plethora of time till week one from here and there. So it's not like I'm in panic mode over here, but I will say so far a little bit underwhelmed, but I would find it to be a productive offseason to this point in time.
I think a lot of us, when you look back on the Diggs trade from last year, where they ate the money right away to kind of free up space for this year, you look at what they did with Mitch Morse's contract when they got rid of Jordan Poyer. The Bills really took their medicine last year, and then to their credit, they still made it to the AFC Championship game and were one score loss away from making it to the Super Bowl and maybe some questionable calls. But now I think a lot of us went into this offseason thinking that this was going to be the time that the Bills were going to get right and really add and stockpile players. But I think there's a couple of issues here. One, I think this is a very underwhelming free agent class, relatively speaking. A lot of the names that we were getting excited about never really came to fruition. And a lot of them were more so trade pieces. When you talk about Myles Garrett and Trey Hendrickson, it seemed like that they were going to be moving. And it felt like the Bills could absolutely, with all the draft picks they have and the money they have been players in both of those cases. But Myles Garrett re-upped with Cleveland. Trey Hendrickson, it sounds like, is going to stay in Cincinnati now as they kind of drag their feet on that. And now what you're left with is the Bills desperately needing to add an edge. They released Von Miller to save some money. And now they take a swing on Joey Bosa. And I think you and I share a brain on Joey Bosa. When he's healthy, he's an impact player. Now, I don't think that when he's healthy, he's a top five edge in the sport anymore. That maybe was his reality several years ago. But I think if he's healthy, Joey Bosa could be right up there with Greg Rousseau at that level. Not great, but a notch below. But the problem is he just has not been healthy consistently for the last three or four seasons. And some of the injuries he's had are ones that really start to concern you as a player turns that 30-year-old corner when you're talking about core muscle injuries and back injuries and things like that. So, you know, the Bills did not take on a lot of risk here. It was a one-year, $12 million deal. It's not like the Von Miller deal where if he gets hurt right away, like you're just eating that money. The Bills are certainly not up against it as far as anything beyond this year. And there is real upside here with Joey Bosa if you can find a way to keep him healthy. So we share a brain on that. I don't know that I would go as far as to say the Bills are done at edge. You know, you still, I guess you have the development of Javon Solomon. You still have whatever you consider AJ Epenesa to be, whether it's a frontline starter or, you know, a valuable depth piece. But right now it seems like it's Russo and Bosa and Epenesa, and that's probably where, and then obviously Michael Hoyt. I want to talk about Hoyt and then also group him in with Larry Ogunjobi, because news came out on Friday, Luca, at Brandon Bean's press conference that both of those guys now are going to be serving 6-game suspensions. You already talked about Hoyt's issue, and Brandon Bean was pretty honest. He said he didn't know about Ogunjobi's suspension until he was about to sign the deal they offered him, and he just didn't want to like go back on his word. I tell you, Bean, you're a better man than me. I would have ripped that contract right away from him. Like, we're living in a different world than we were living in 30 seconds ago. See ya. Bad look for the Bills. There's no way around it. When, you know, you're talking about an edge player, a kind of a guy that can play anywhere in Hoyt, and then Ogunjobi, a guy who can be a 3-technique, a 1-technique. They're going to miss 6 games. That's a huge chunk of the season. And for the Bills to not have been aware about Ogunjobi's, to still be willing to pay Hoyt despite being aware of it, I don't want to say it puts a black eye on what the Bills have done this offseason, but when you talk about those are out with Joey Bosa, the three biggest additions to the defense, and now two of them are going to miss about a third of the year, Luca, it's like, what was your plan, Bills? Granted, this is a team that I think at this point, until proven otherwise, you can assume is going to be in the playoffs. Maybe Brandon Bean's thinking, hey, I can deal with guys not being here in September and October. Give me the best team I can get in December and January. That's the glass half full approach. But to me, it feels like the Bills got caught with their eye off the ball a little bit here with these two signings.
I think what you said there with the glass half full approach is part of it. I will say that. I think there's less of a concern on availability early in the season and just a point of emphasis of, are these guys that they can see being productive in the building to get them the results they need when they need them, which of course is when you get into the playoffs, when you get late into the season, when the games matter the most. Clearly, this team still needs to get over that wonderful hump that they need to. But I am also with you when it comes to, it feels odd in the world we live in when you look at it from an NFL perspective, not necessarily just the Bills. This is a very business-driven, cutthroat. I don't want to say cutthroat. I think that's a little bit extreme. But it's business first, right? It's the model of money talks and, you know, sorry, look at the Niners. The Niners started just letting go a lot of key guys. They needed to free up money. They made business decisions left and right, where then you even had an individual in Kyle Juszczyk come back on a cheaper deal after he kind of saw the grass wasn't greener with the money for a fullback in the world. But overall, you see business decisions being made, and Bean is sitting here as if that's, when you make a comment where it's like, hey, I didn't want to go back on my word, you can respect the hell out of that as a person, but this is a business, and that is not a business-like decision. That is a being personable almost to a fault, and I can respect it, but also disagree with it. I think to understand that the suspension was coming and to just be like, hey, we had already agreed to this term. We had already agreed to this dollar amount. We're going to stick with it. My question to Bean is, what are you trying to prove with that? I don't see a positive way to come out of that and be like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's a valid way to go about it. You know, there's value to what you're doing now that will reap benefits down the road. Now, if Larry Ogunjobi turns into the absolute vital key piece on the interior defensive line to make the run that we want this team to make, I'll eat my words in March, but also I don't feel like I need to, because those are going to be completely separate thoughts at that point in time. I don't think Bean was tough enough in his own mind. Like, that is an opportunity almost, in a way, where you should be able to find it valid to sit there and go, hey, as you pointed out perfectly, we're in a different world from 30 seconds ago or 5 minutes ago or whenever it is that they learned about the PED situation, or, you know, just whatever's going on. We're not going to do this contract, but we still want you, and hopefully we can come up with a number that works for both of us here, understanding that now, you know, is that a problem? Like, there's a way to be respectful about it, but also still be businesslike. And I think Bean just wasn't tough enough to make that happen. Or, you know, I can, again, respect it as a human being. He just wants to stick to his word, but this is a business. This is the NFL. I don't want to go as far as, you know, it looks bad, but it's just, I don't see what looks good about it either. That's the kind of thing I look at when it comes to the, what Bean's words carry in the Ogunjobi situation.
And he's not a special player. He's an aging player. He's a good athlete for his size. He can back up at the three and the one, but you gave him $8 million guaranteed. And it just feels like those resources could have been used elsewhere. That's just, $8 million isn't a whole lot in today's NFL, but it's enough. And, you know, it kind of feels like that the Bills have been a little bit out to sea with some of their plans at defensive tackle recent years, dating back maybe to even having Puna Ford on this roster and not being able to get him on the field. It doesn't feel like that the Bills value size and strength, and you know, a lot of fans were clamoring for a big beefy one technique, and it just feels like that the Bills, that's just not their MO. They're content to let people run on them, and to their credit, they beat the Baltimore Ravens in the playoffs, and they were an eyelash away from beating the Chiefs. So a lot of us want that big one technique that Daquan Jones was for a year or two, but that does not seem to be imminent right now. And Larry Ogunjobi, you just have to hope at this point that when he does come back in the middle to late October, that he becomes an impact player for this team, because right now that's going to be a lot of money that the Bills have sitting on the sidelines, not being able to help them. Let's talk about some of the extensions the Bills have done before we get into some other players they've signed, Luca. The Bills have extended some of their own this offseason. Josh Allen got a new contract. He is going to be a Bill for life. I think a lot of us knew that was going to be the case, but really it does save the Bills some money this offseason as well. So it worked out well for both sides. Greg Rousseau got a contract extension, which with him playing on the fifth year option also saves the Bills money against the cap. Khalil Shakir is locked up for the long term, and Terrell Bernard. And you know, in recent years, Luke, I mean, the Josh Allen's a different conversation. I don't think there was any kind of anxiety about him not being a Bill. He's the face of this franchise until the day he retires. I think Greg Rousseau was probably the one that people were most split on because of the fact that he does tend to be good, not great. But like you said, his contract was one that is valued at good, not great. And I think that's very good considering his age and his measurables. And then Khalil Shakir and Terrell Bernard are just two players that really have turned it on the last couple of years. And they signed contracts that I think are very team-friendly for the Bills. The two remaining names that a lot of us want to talk about are Christian Benford, who could be in store for a mega deal at cornerback, and then James Cook, do you or don't you pay the running back? That is what the Bills are up against right now with some of their young players. Of the three that already signed, Luca, Rousseau, Shakir, and Terrell Bernard, did you have a problem with any one of those signings?
No, not at all. I genuinely mean that, not at all. I think you hit the nail on the head talking about the Rousseau situation going into it, leading into prior when he got that contract extension. And it was one where is that money going to go? That was even before, I believe. I mean, man, time is a blur right now. I'm pretty sure that came in before the Myles Garrett situation. Maybe it didn't. Overall, when you compare the two, though, right? Myles Garrett is the standard. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Right. He is the standard at that edge position, and he gets just over $40 million a year. So all of a sudden, you have Gregory Rousseau, though, sitting there at around $20-ish million a year, and you're like, that makes a lot of sense. If you were to say to me, you have a young, promising edge individual that doesn't quite rush the passer the way you want him to, but is still a very known presence out there and can do a great job majority of the time, maybe even outside the stat sheet. What is he worth to you? I would say half a Myles Garrett, and that's exactly basically what he got. And that, to me, is the perfect number that then he still has room to blossom and become better. He's young. He's extremely young that it's like, yes, this is going into his second contract now, but realistically, it's like this guy is still someone. He's not even 25 yet, technically. Well, as of a recording, he will be 25 going into the season, but he's not 25 yet. And he has time to develop even from here. It's not like he's going to grow crazy amount, but you would like to see if he could even go somewhere from here. Terrell Bernard and Shakir, though, were absolute no-brainers, especially at the numbers that we got them at, in my eyes. I couldn't believe, in my opinion, the Shakir deal is one that blew me away. I don't know the conversation that happened for that, but whatever it was, Shakir clearly loves to play here, and that is what I will call a hometown discount. Now, does Shakir have the years and seasons of stats to really get that premier wide receiver money? Not premier, but even like, let's say north of 20 a year money. Not really, but the eye test and last season are enough that you could have seen it where in negotiations his representation's like, hey, we want to hit 20 million at least. That's where we want to go. And the fact of it ending where it did is, yeah, to me, that one felt and smells like a hometown discount, and he's just happy to be here. He wants to be Josh's guy, and if that's the power of what that is, hell yeah. Thank you very much. And Terrell Bernard, for what it's worth as well, I feel like was a slight hometown discount as well. Feels like he could have maybe gotten a little bit more, maybe not too much, just because he is a little bit of an undersized Mike, but he's still a phenomenal player that tons of teams would want. And I would imagine his number could be a little bit more than what he ultimately ended up with. But I'm very, very happy with those deals. And even still pretty damn happy with the Rousseau deal overall, that I have zero issue with all three of those signatures.
Terrell Bernard gets 10.5 APY, which is really low when you think about the fact that he is kind of like the glue on this defense. He is the Mike. He's the guy that wears the green dot. Khalil Shakir comes in at 13 million APY, but it starts getting heavy 3 years into it. And for context, Dyami Brown is making 10 million APY. So that was a wild deal. And we're seeing receivers out there, you know, pushing 30, pushing 35 million a year. So, I mean, be happy that the Bills got Khalil Shakir. Let's go back to the receiver room, Luca, because I think coming into this offseason, it was one, did we see enough out of Amari Cooper for the Bills to go out and re-sign him? To this point on March 16th, nobody has re-signed Amari Cooper. There's been some chatter out there in league circles that maybe he has lost a step and maybe he's not that number one receiver anymore. And I would think by the fact that he hasn't signed with a team yet, perhaps there's some sort of a disconnect between what his agent sees his value as and what the team sees his value as. And then what will the Bills do to replace him? Because we do know that prior to the Amari Cooper trade, even though his stats were not eye-popping by any means with the Bills were having trouble moving the ball, particularly against good defenses, and they needed somebody to separate. And what they did is they went out and they did add two veteran wide receivers to this group, but they're not household names. One is Joshua Palmer, who's been a nice role player for the Chargers. He does have some metrics that really look nice on some of those charts when it comes to route running and instant separation. I would say always take those metrics with a grain of salt because they don't always factor in who's covering you. And when you are running next to guys like Keenan Allen and Ladd McConkey, you generally aren't drawing the best defensive back on the field. The other guy they did add was Laviska Shenault. A couple years ago, this was a guy that people thought could be like the next Debo Samuel. He's kind of fizzled out since then. I think he has a chance to be a fun chess piece for this Bills team, but realistically, sitting here on March 16th, I think he's probably going to be on the outside of this roster. I think the Bills have room to add one more receiver, Luca. They did lose Mac Hollins to the Patriots. I know that was sad for a lot of Bills fans, but I'm proud of the Bills for drawing their line in the sand and saying, this is where we're willing to go for Mac Hollins, and we're not going to go above it. I think that's either going to come A, via the draft, B, via a reunion with Amari Cooper. But as the wide receiver room sits right now, when you're looking at Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, Joshua Palmer, LaVisca Chenault. Who am I forgetting? Keon Coleman. That to me, all respect to Khalil Shakir, all respect to the growth of what we could expect from Keon Coleman. That to me resembles a lot like the receiver group last year, where it's like we have a lot of Robins, but do we have a Batman? Maybe Keon Coleman becomes the Batman. Maybe Khalil Shakir grows into the Batman. Maybe Joshua Palmer.
Stop.
So that then says, are you going to go into the draft and try to find a Batman, or are you going to try to find one with what's left in free agency? What do you think about the wide receiver group as it sits there today?
No, I think comparing it to last season is extremely valid. I think in my eyes, when you look at the, for instance, LaVisca Chenault signing, it's Chase Claypool all over again. Look, it's an athletic talent that you're bringing in around camp. You see what you get out of it. If magic happens by some freak of nature, maybe you have something there. But overall, there's a reason he hasn't been working out. It's not like, yes, he was drafted by the Jags in the second round, but it's not. And then he did go to the Panthers at some point, but he was in the Seahawks building at some point. He was in the Chargers building at some point. Those teams who are no pushovers, you know, they've been having success of late, didn't find value for him to do anything and let him walk. It's crazy to me, honestly, with LaVisca Chenault specifically. And the only reason I'm bringing him up first is I didn't even realize he's only 26 years old right now.
Ooh.
It feels like he's been around a lot more than that. So of course he came into the league young. It hasn't worked out the way that I think a lot of individuals, I wasn't personally one massively sold on that, but you are absolutely spot on when there were people out there that thought he was the truth and he was going to be one of those next true gadget freaks. And I mean, you don't get drafted 42nd overall because you're some bum. There was a lot of individuals that believed he could be something at the next level. It hasn't worked out. But he's really just going to be a camp body in my eyes. And then Joshua Palmer, I think there's things to like about his game and things that almost he will provide that a Mac Hollins could not, and no one else really can, even a Keon Coleman. He is known to be a little bit of a downfield separator compared to the rest. And for a guy his size, that's definitely something that is welcomed. But I'm not expecting him to go and, you know, just absolutely tear it up just because he has Josh Allen now. I think you might be able to see the best form of him, just like you see the best form of everyone when healthy, when you have Josh Allen throwing them the ball. But he's just one in the, he's one pea in the pod, Josh. He is everything like that. The number one is Khalil Shakir. That will not change, but Khalil Shakir is not a primary boundary receiver, and you need to find guys to do that. You have Keon Coleman, who you drafted last year and hope to continue to develop. You needed to find someone else to replace that Mac Hollins role and spot in the rotation. And Joshua Palmer feels like a great addition in that sense to bring in here and fill that role and maybe even provide a little bit more spice to that role that can be depended on maybe just a tick more than a Mac Hollins. As fun as Mac Hollins is, and I am one with all of them out there, Josh, that is very upset that he's not going to be a Bill next season. And on top of it all, he is going to be a filthy Patriot next season, a sneaky, decent-ish Patriots team, might I add. Just putting it out there. Patriots might be better than the Dolphins. Just saying. Anyways, it's overall, though, the wide receiver group is just, it's nothing special right now. It's the same old crap. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just curious if they really are going to run it back like this again. It feels like if you wanted to learn your lesson, it wouldn't be the thing to do. And I know there was, I think that report you're kind of referencing that kind of discussed maybe Amari Cooper has truly lost a step and people in league circles don't believe he's that real number one anymore. That there was an article out there that talked about that, that then also said the Bills mentioned Kincaid was a lot more banged up than people were aware of, and that there's still a lot of faith that he can become this truly dynamic offensive weapon for this offense. That's great. Need to see it to believe it. And I'm not going to sit here and go put all my eggs in that basket and live in the reality of the receiver group being this and think it's okay. That is my opinion sitting at my office desk in my house, not at One Bills Drive. So it's not like that the end all be all, but I just don't see how that makes a lot of sense to ride it as it is all the way through to September and find it to be okay. Time will tell if that's actually the case.
You mentioned something interesting there because I said it's comparable to last year. And in some respects, maybe it's worse than last year because we had the Kincaid thing where it was like, well, they don't have a number one receiver, but man, Kincaid, he's going to take a leap and he could be like the next Travis Kelce, the next George Kittle, the next, you know, great tight end in this league. And then you don't even really need a number one. He's your number one. And all due respect to that, he fought through injury. I get that. It's a violent sport. I'm with Luca. I want to see it to believe it. He dropped a lot of passes this year, which, you know, would indicate to me that maybe he was dealing with an injury because he did not drop passes in college. But I am not going to assume that Kincaid's going to be an elite tight end by any means. And I do not necessarily want my team's offense to be filtered through a tight end. I just think that the passes are too short. They're not explosive enough. I want to see some downfield threats, and I don't necessarily see it right now on this Bills team. But luckily for them, there's still a free agent class out there and a draft class. Luca, would you bring back Amari Cooper?
No, I would not bring back Amari Cooper. I don't hate the player. I am in absolute agreement that he is not the same Amari Cooper that he was, of course. I mean, time is undefeated for a reason. I feel like I say that a lot, but it is reality. And I think last season was telling, and I know Amari got hurt at one point, but it felt like the highest of high when it came to Amari Cooper being on this roster was really early on when they had first acquired him. And then he gets banged up. Of course, he did catch that touchdown against the Titans. He gets banged up. He comes back. He does have that one touchdown against the Jets late in the season.
Right.
But outside of that, like realistically, you saw them going more downfield still to Mac Hollins and Shakir, mm-hmm. of course, and things like that. And it's like, that tells me a lot. And that right there, the proof is in the pudding. And when I see that, and then you see a report come out, like we're mentioning here, we're in league circles and it's talking, I believe at that case was a Bills related source, whatever level it was. I don't think it was really relayed, but that they said they don't believe he's a number one anymore and he's lost a step. That tracks, like, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. I genuinely believe that might be the case, and no longer can he be that guy. And if that's the reality of it and he still thinks he can, then I don't have an interest. Now, if he's willing to take a very hefty pay cut compared to what he usually got, and just be part of the machine, we'll call it, and just be another body in the rotation, I'm all for that. But he's as you mentioned, he's just another Robin at that point. He's just another piece. He's one thing that you can do to maybe get through, let's call it, a handful of the games throughout the season. That's what he's going to get you. It doesn't feel like he's going to do much more for you. And if you want more than that, he is not the answer. So look elsewhere. And in my eyes, I don't even know where you find that in free agency. So realistically, you probably are dipping back in a draft, which luckily there is some talent in this draft at that wide receiver position, Josh.
The thing we never saw from Amari Cooper as a Bill was, one, the increased snap share. Even in the playoffs, he was getting out-snapped by Mac Hollins. But we never saw that separation. And even his big catch against the Jets you mentioned was a contested catch. And those are cool. Those are fun highlights. But at the end of the day, that's not a sustainable offense. But Amari Cooper didn't do what a lot of us thought he was going to do, which was come in and be an instant separator. And I agree. I do think that the Bills should be in the market for trying to upgrade receiver. But, you know, you can go into a store and you might need to buy a 75-inch TV, but if they only have 50-inch TVs for sale, it doesn't matter how much money you have in your pocket. You don't want to spend that on a 50-inch TV if what you need is a 75-inch. And the Bills right now might just be a team that needs a receiver, but there's just not one available to them, whether it's where they pick in the draft or what's available in free agency. So they need to continue to look under every stone. One other position that I think might be the primary concern of most Bills fans right now is cornerback. The Bills traded away Kyer Elam to the Dallas Cowboys for a fifth-round pick, which I think was good value in return because the Bills saved several million dollars against the cap as well to get rid of him. It just never worked out, and I think after the performance we saw in the AFC Championship game, Luca, where he came in off the bench and the Chiefs just kept peppering him with targets and he looked like he had no idea what the defensive scheme was, I don't know how you could have brought him back. I got suckered in preseason thinking maybe he was going to take that third year leap. It never came to fruition. But another name that's sneaky out there is Rasul Douglas. He was a free agent. He's still out there. You know, he was good 2 years ago for the Bills. Last year, it felt like he slowed down quite a bit. And, you know, at some point, though, the Bills are going to need somebody. Speaking of needing somebody, the Bills brought back Dane Jackson, which I would say at this point is an upgrade over what Kyer Elam was giving you as your primary backup boundary cornerback. You still have Jamarcus Ingram. I'm not going to mention Codrington in this conversation. He's a kick returner, and that's it. You still have Daquan Hardy, who we both liked in preseason. He's back on a futures deal. But Luca, right now, the Bills have Christian Benford, who had a massive concussion in the Chiefs game. And I think at this point, I don't want to say he's a massive question mark because he has all offseason, but not being able to stay healthy has now become a thing with Christian Benford. And it's a very unfair thing to say about a guy whose AFC Championship game was cut short by a concussion. And on the other side, pick a name. Dane Jackson, Jamarcus Ingram. The Bills don't have an answer. I like Dane Jackson as your third/fourth cornerback. I think you have a guy with starting experience in this system that can come in and get you through a month if you have an injury at that position. But as far as a day one opener of the season answer, the Bills are going to have to find a way to be aggressive here. But again, supply and demand. Who's the name in free agency that the Bills are going to go after? What's the answer out there in free agency? I don't know what it is. But right now, the Bills seem like they're kind of between a rock and a hard place at cornerback.
Yeah, I think the Bills are finding out that, not finding out, they're seeing a market right now where there's just not options. There's nothing there to be had. I mean, you see stuff out there, Josh, that's like, hey, the Bills should really be taking a swing at Asante Samuel Jr. It's like, I mean, in a dream world, maybe, but like also at the same time, really? Like, I don't understand where that would work, how that would work for a multitude of reasons.
Sean McDermott values tackling way too much. You can hate it if you want to, but the reality is he would never co-sign giving a cornerback that doesn't have any interest in tackling huge money in his system.
Bingo. I mean, that's a one of many. Like, yeah. It's not a fit. It just doesn't make sense. So on and so forth. So when you look at that, it's like, that's the one that I think as a name you hear people talk about. And then outside of that, let's just go down the list. I pulled it up while you were talking, just because honestly, in my eyes, I was even trying to think who could even be out there. And when you see names at the top of the list being James Bradbury, Chidobe Awuzie, like obviously we mentioned Rasul Douglas, Jeff Okuda, like those are the guys you're looking at, like
Jeff Okuda.
Okay. I mean, it's
Stephon Gilmore. Turn back time.
Does he think his family can watch him on TV if he comes to play with the Bills? I don't know if that's going to work. So geez, the point here is, I think the cornerback position, something that it's crazy. It felt like a year ago, we were like, yeah, this is a pretty strong position for the Bills. We are in a spot where it's tough. It's tough to look at. Christian Benford is still Christian Benford. And I think where we sit on Christian Benford is he's exactly where we sat on him before. He's a great top tier at times corner who is absolutely a side of the field shutdown when he can be. When he can be is the asterisk of needs to be healthy. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard to put a concussion against him. I mean, that's just something that can happen in freak nature. It's not, you know, hey, you just have weak ligaments or, you know, you got soft bones. That's just something that happens and then it reoccurs. That's just the nature of head injuries such as that. But it's still another injury. and you just need this guy to stay healthy. And can you palate paying him $25 million a year if you know that you're probably going to be without him at some point in time? And let's just hope it's during, you know, the early stretch of the season then. Hey, maybe that would be nice. That's not, it doesn't make you feel warm and fuzzy at night thinking about that. And where you are is you at least have him for next year, but you need to figure out something on the other side. You have to do something. I mean, I mentioned it. If you technically pulled up PFF right now to just look at a lineup, it would actually slot Codrington in. And he was a meme to me because if Codrington was in, guess what? It was Alec Pierce going like this. It's like, just throw it up on me. Like, we got this. Like, that's
not going to be a problem.
Codrington is a return specialist. Mm-hmm. He is not a boundary corner. Okay. Like, that's just, that's not where they're going to leave it. The problem is where are they going to leave it? What is the answer? Is the answer doing what they did, like when they were with Kyer Elam, and finding something through the draft? Maybe. Is there something in free agency? To my eyes, I don't know. Probably not. But it's a serious, we'll call it an orange flag. It's not a red flag. It's an orange flag. It's a heavy concern bordering on red flag of what the hell are we doing with this? And I'm just going to leave this point with this, Josh. I trust Sean McDermott in one area of expertise, and that's figuring out the secondary and corners and safeties. And if he has some idea cooked up on how he's going to solve that issue, I will trust him on it. I will let my belief in Sean McDermott at this point guide its way through and understanding that, one, Brandon Codrington will not be playing cornerback two for this team, and two, that he has an idea of what he can do with that that will make sure Dane Jackson is not CB2 as well. And there will be another answer, because I'm with you on Dane Jackson. It's like, hey, he is a perfect CB3-4, game day active, get you out of certain situations. We saw what he is capable of before. Let's continue to let him be that person, and hopefully he will continue to be that guy for us, even though he had a down year in Carolina. But it's heavily concerning there on the boundary corner situation for this Bills team.
I do wonder, because you know the Bills don't want to go into the draft with an obvious need if they can avoid it. I wonder if the Bills at this point in time would consider bringing back Rasul Douglas on a one-year deal if his market is down to the point where they can fit him under the cap. You know, I'm not saying they're going to give him $15 million a year, but if you can get him for, say, like 6 or 7 with incentives that can get him up to 10 if he plays a certain amount of snaps or whatever, that might be where they're at. I do think that there might be some interest in James Bradbury. I want to say they crossed paths with McDermott. Would he have been there in Carolina with McDermott?
Maybe.
I feel like whenever he was available before there was a crossover, it may not have been McDermott specifically. Maybe it was Al Holcomb.
Would have been 2016, 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right around old. Yeah.
So he got drafted a year before Tre'Davious White. Tre'Davious White's out there. If you're looking for somebody that has experience in this system.
Nope.
And that's about it. The Bills are in a tough spot. But it's March 16th. So
that's right.
No need to freak out. Other things the Bills have done. They released Von Miller. They released Sam Martin. They're in the market for a new punter. Although many think that the Bills are pretty content with the punter they have on their roster right now. As we turn our attention to the draft, Luca, and we think about what's left in free agency, which we've been through. Oh, I guess I can go through some of the other moves they made really quick there. None of these are really going to move the needle here. They have also brought in Kendrick Green, backup offensive lineman for the Steelers. The metrics do not like him at all, but he's a veteran backup. It is what it is. Derek Forrest, the safety they got from Washington, is interesting to me. I think this is a guy that can legitimately challenge for a starting job or at least playing time if he's given the opportunity to. And that's a big if. The Bills did bring back DeMar Hamlin on a one-year deal. I don't think that has to mean DeMar Hamlin's going to start. In fact, I would think it's an upset if Cole Bishop is not one of your starters next year. I would expect Taylor Rapp to be the other starter just because he was like the vocal leader of that secondary. But you follow people that follow Washington, and they're confused by why Forrest was not able to get on the field. And then Bean did say that McDermott talked with Ron Rivera, who was the coach for Forest prior to this past year when it was Dan Quinn, and he raved about this kid. So there's some athleticism there, which I think we can all agree is very much missing in this Bills secondary. That's just a name to keep an eye on. I don't want to get too excited because this time last year I was like, Mike Edwards, this guy's going to matter. And boy, did he not matter at all. But Forrest is a guy that I think is at least worth thinking about for a little bit. They did bring back Ty Johnson on a two-year deal. And we already mentioned Joshua Palmer. What is first and foremost sticking out in your brain, Luca, as, okay, Bean, show me something at this position, or what's sticking out to you, Luca, as like, we have to get this taken care of?
That's a tough one. Secondary is what I look at, though. Like, I can't look away from the secondary. And it's for multiple reasons. It's for a couple things. One, we talked about the boundary corner situation, right? We talked about that. You brought up the one safety that they brought in formerly of the Commies. And yes, he could be something, but realistically, as if you look at it now at the safety position, it's not like you're going to slot him in there. They bring back the safeties that they had last season, and it feels like that's where they're going to be. I don't find that acceptable. I think that's just not good enough. We saw why it's not good enough. I mean, Damar Hamlin, just more power to him for keeping on playing, but he's not good enough. Like, I just don't have any other way to say it. He's not. And Taylor Rapp, he likes to kill you. He's just another, it's a weird thing to say. He's just another Jordan Poyer. Like, he's going to kill you where he goes. He's going to get himself dinged up on the lay. He's okay. He's not exactly the best deep coverage safety in the world, but he can get you by as well. So it works, I guess. And if we're already kind of one eye on draft because the secondary stuff is slim out there in the market, there's also players to be had that I think check a lot of boxes for what the Bills would be looking for and what would phase in and kind of improve things. I mean, it's impossible. And this is not a boundary corner answer. Jeez.
We're good.
This is not a boundary corner answer, but Jahdae Barrett is just an individual I cannot stop looking at and going, man, I really want him to fall to 30 and or the Bills to be aggressive enough to move up 3, 4, 5 spots and get him, because he's a safety nickel corner hybrid that is just, I mean, he's a killer. He is a dog. He is a Taron replacement if you want him to be. He could potentially at the next level just be a pure safety if that's where they want to slot him in. He's got everything you possibly want. And it's, but you have other individuals, not necessarily to the high end caliber of a Jahdae Barron that could be on the Bills radar, but other individuals that are very good in the secondary that I think could absolutely be day one impact players for this roster with the way it's constructed currently. That, if I'm Bean, the secondary is just still like, you know, whiteboards don't really exist anymore, but on the whiteboard, it's still just priority number one, secondary, safety / corner, like figure it the F out. Like, what are we doing here? Let's map it out. Both, like you said, maybe with trying to figure out a way to get Rasul back on a one-year deal to maybe feel better about yourself-ish going into next season at the boundary, but then also map how we can figure that and navigate it through the draft. Who are the guys? Are you going to take that swing for a Jahdae Barron? Are you going to sit there and maybe get a Benjamin Morrison out of Notre Dame? Like, that's a corner position. Xavier Watts also out of Notre Dame, just a guy that I love as well. How are we going to figure this out here, that these are guys that we can do it through the draft, that at after draft weekend, secondary is no longer something where you're going, I have an orange flag next to it, because what the hell is going on? We are one banged up Christian Benford away from Brandon Codrington playing meaningful snaps, and that absolutely cannot happen. So yeah, I just, secondary is the one and only I cannot avoid looking at.
I'm a genius because I've solved the issue. You need a cornerback and a receiver. Just trade up for Travis Hunter.
Oh, Jesus.
Problem solved. I don't know how many people will agree with this. I think the Bills have one good player in their secondary, and it's Christian Benford. I love Taron Johnson. I've loved him his entire career. Did you watch him in coverage last year? He was not great. And the Bills went into an AFC championship game against the Chiefs with the book on the Chiefs being, if you can play man coverage against them, you can really slow them down. And the Bills could not keep up with them in man coverage. And I think that's a problem. And we've seen Bean overreact to how they've lost their last game of the season before. I don't know that signing Rasul Douglas fixes that issue, but this team desperately needs better athletes in the secondary. I think one path to that is Cole Bishop. I think potentially if you want, you're not going to be able to take a bunch of swings here because you really only have one first round pick and maybe another move in free agency, but it's kind of bare. Maybe Forrest becomes something and him and Bishop are your athletic safeties. You have Christian Benford, who's not a great athlete, but he's a great player. I think you got to swing big at cornerback in this draft and just see what you can get and trust McDermott to coach him up. And then I would do exactly what the Bills did when they drafted Kyer Elam several years ago. Take a swing on day three and trust the organization and the development program here to get the best out of a secondary player, because you whiffed on Kyer Elam, but you struck gold. You found money in the couch cushions with Christian Benford, and it kind of offset that loss. All right, Luca, what's next for the Bills? Well, free agency has kind of slowed down. The draft is coming up here in about 6 weeks. The Bills have a ton of draft picks now after the Kyer Elam trade, after getting two compensatory picks. They have a first, a second, multiple fourths, multiple fifths. They are in good shape to do really whatever they want to in this draft, but that's good because they have a lot of needs. They also might need a punter. Right now, as we sit here, is this a better or a worse Bills team than the one that took the field against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game?
I'm going to say it's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And I bet you even after the draft, I will continue to say it's exactly the same. And the reason I will say that is because 17 is healthy. And when you have 17 and now you have freshly new minted number 8 at the mic position and healthy, those are the two guys that it's like better or worse. As long as they're healthy, I think this is the same team. And like, there are the other important impact players like your Eddie Oliver. Of course, Rousseau is still there. We mentioned him. Shakir is still the guy. Keon, hopefully he stays healthy all season, but these are secondary impact players, because your two pieces that need to make everything work are Terrell Bernard, and then obviously, much, much, much more importantly, your reigning MVP of the NFL, Josh Allen. And as long as you have those two guys, you are the same team. And it's really hard to get better than Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to say it's the same team because they're healthy. And I'm assuming going into week one, as of we're sitting here on March 16th, those guys will be taking the field for this Bills team. So better or worse, I don't think it's either. They are exactly the same because those two are just good enough to elevate everything else and figure it out.
I think I'm with you. I think you look at out with Mac Collins and Amari Cooper, in with Josh Palmer and Chenault, maybe kind of a wash. Offensive line should be around the same. Running back room should be about the same. Tight end room should be about the same. You add Joey Bosa and Ogunjobi, but you lose Smoot, you lose Von Miller. Maybe it's a slight uptick from this year. But who knows where Hoyt fits in whenever he gets here. The secondary is probably a little bit worse, but let's just say for argument's sake that it's the same. It nets out to be the same. I think that's a failure, because what did we hear all last year? What did we hear leading up to the divisional round matchup with the Ravens? Well, the Ravens are clearly the better team. But the Bills have Josh Allen. They have a fighting shot. And the Bills hung on by a thread. This was not supposed to be a year where the Bills go into 2025, again, needing Josh Allen to wear the cape and carry an inferior roster through this AFC that is a grind. And as it sits right now, it's just unlikely to me that the Bills are going to be in position to really massively improve. Now, things can change. And the thing is, the things that can change are even things that we may not even see when they happen. When the Chargers drafted Ladd McConkey, you didn't know at the time that they had massively improved their wide receiver group, but he got on the field and you saw it pretty quickly. A couple of years back, the Rams with Puka Nacua, you're like, oh, okay, whatever. And then he gets on the field, you're like, okay, that's a massive improvement. So there could be some improvement from the draft. That's just something we won't know until the games start, but every team in the league has a shot at that. So that's not unique to the Bills. It doesn't seem like there's much out there via free agency. Maybe there's a trade out there that we aren't thinking about, but right now, Luca, it's just hard to imagine a scenario where here 7 months or 8 months from now, 6 months from now, when the Bills take the field against a team like the Ravens, or they take the field against the Eagles, that we're not sitting here saying, hearing Chris Sims, Dan Orlovsky say, well, the Eagles and Ravens are better top to bottom, but the Bills have the reigning MVP, so they got a shot. I don't want to have a shot. I want to have the roster that everybody's envious of and the MVP, because that's how you make magic happen. It's so hard to expect the quarterback to be perfect through four rounds of the playoffs against four good teams. But when you have a roster that can make up for it, that's where it's better. So, you know, there's going to be growth from internal. Keon Coleman could become a stud. You just never know. Osiris Torrance could become one of the best guards in the draft. You never know. Maybe Dalton Kincaid takes a leap. Who knows? There's so much that's going to happen that you really can't predict it. We never knew Terrell Bernard was going to be as good as he is. We had ideas, but we never knew Christian Benford was going to be a top of the league cornerback. You never know, but it just feels like I think a lot of us were hoping for more bird in hand right now, more givens than, hey, you never know. But I think what we're left with, Luca, is a team that's going to be right there in January with a chance to beat the Chiefs or the Ravens or the Bengals. And it'll all come down to one play that gives us all a heart attack. And if they get it done, they'll get a chance to play the next week. And we'll see if they can convert that two or three times in a row after they win their wild card matchup against a team that should have never been there. That's kind of their thing now. And, you know, we'll see if they can finally get it done. But I'd say for now, it's been kind of a slightly disappointing offseason, just because I think we were hoping for massive improvements, even though we've kind of covered it. Maybe there weren't massive improvements to be had based on what was available.
If I can make you feel better after what seemed like a pretty depressing monologue, please, on your part, the league year just started last week. We are fresh into the offseason. There is, as you kind of mentioned, there is plenty of time for things to change. And as those things change, comes hope and desire and inspiration and things that will get you excited for the upcoming season. I think that it's kind of like what I did in season during games, Josh. This team is going to get the ball driven down their throat on the opening drive. They're going to allow a touchdown, and it's going to feel like it sucks. Don't overreact. That's just because Sean McDermott's the most predictable coach in the history of the NFL. And somehow this team trots out every effing week. It just does the same old thing that is as predictable as can be. And they're just going to get it driven down their throat. That's fine. We're going to figure it out at halftime. We're going to figure it out coming out. And when you need it the most, thank God you have 17. And this coaching staff is, in fact, good enough to get it over the line a lot more than a lot of the others. They don't get it over the line all the way. And that's why obviously the disappointment is there right now, but this is early on. This is that opening drive of the off season. We just got it driven down our throats. It's not fun. This is like, okay, yep, pretty predictable. Addressed it heavily on the defensive line because they clearly recognize that the defensive line isn't good enough, because it wasn't. We have glaring issues elsewhere. We'll figure it out. This coaching staff is good enough. We still have Josh Allen. We still have Terrell Bernard, and thank God for that. Imagine being the Cleveland Browns, who just made Myles Garrett the most expensive non-quarterback, and yet at the quarterback position, you either have a massively overpaid Achilles ruptured starter that you don't want to put on the field. You traded for the Steelers reject and kneel down specialist for the Eagles, Kenny Pickett. Or rumor has it you're, you know, maybe contemplating bringing in a Russell Wilson to see what you can do, because you got to win football games for that guy who just signed for $40+ million a year. That is a premier edge rusher because he's going from Cleveland to Canton and he wants to win. You could be that team too. And you could be a fan of that team, or you could be sitting here understanding you at least have 17 at quarterback, 8 at Mike, a very good head coach, not great, very, very good head coach, who is very good at developing that one key position that is a serious problem right now, and a draft upcoming right now that still has a load of promise that we will dive deep, deep into because you and I are draft junkies. Mm-hmm. And I bet you coming out of that draft, Josh, we will most likely be feeling better about this roster as a whole and be wondering how exactly they're going to construct it in a way to be playing that meaningful game in Arrowhead, maybe at home against those Chiefs. And it's like, you know, Groundhog Day all over again. We have the ball with a chance to win. Can we make it happen?
And with that, we're going to turn our attention to the draft. And the next time you hear from us, Luca and I will start deep diving into this draft class. Obviously, if the Bills make any significant moves via free agency or trade, we'll be all over it. But yeah, we are sorry again for the extended break. Life happens, but we are back in full force now, ready to transition from free agency to the draft. I did not get attacked earlier. One of my signs I stuck on the wall with adhesive that I didn't read the label and realize it was only meant for 5 pounds and not 20 pounds. That just fell victim, but everything else behind me should be fine. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will talk to you next time on Bills Chat.